before, Hargrove burst through the curtains, bent over in his old man act.
"Come in, dear lady, and have a look upon your future. We are but humble."
"Oh, it's you." He popped and cracked his bones back into place. "You might inform me when you're planning on a visit. It takes me a minute to get my spine all out of order for that entrance." He sat at the table, fluffing his coat. I spotted Charlie's little brother and sister, their faces swollen from crying. "I'd like to speak to you privately."
"Shall I send the children to the parlour or the library?" he drawled, looking about the cramped single room.
Noting my lack of amusement, he clapped his hands and said,
"Take what totems you've finished and go out onto the street. Go, hawk the wares."
They gathered their pieces and trundled outside. Once they'd gone, Hargrove beckoned me to join him.
"How may I serve you? A tarot read? A fortune told? Would you like me to fix your overlarge front teeth?"
He said nothing about the apple. I thought of three different ways to start the conversation. None of them came out of my mouth.
"Well," Hargrove said,
I'm here to see if there's anything I can do for the children," I said lamely. My lie was part cowardice, part hope. Perhaps there was a logical explanation for the apple. Perhaps my vision of him really had been a dream, like my dream of Rook. Nightmares brought on by too much stress. He leaned back in his chair.
"More charity?"
"Yes." I fiddled with the strings of my reticule.
"You're the sorcerer's long-awaited, prophesied one, aren't you?" "I should think vanquishing the ancients will be a great help to my children."
I started. "How did you know?"
"Please, don't insult my intelligence," he snapped. "I'm aware of the sorcerer's absurd antics. Why they should get a nice, juicy prophecy is simply beyond me. Sorcerers are stunted, timid children without the stomach to go beyond the boundaries of the possible."
He laid his hand on the table, then took it away, revealing the card of the woman holding a wand, her hair flying behind her in a great breeze. The card read, "The Queen of Wands."
"You want to help my children? Let me tell your fortune. Tuppence a pop."
"All right." I sat down heavily in relief. He wasn't going to talk about the dream. He snapped his fingers and produced two more cards out of thin air. The first one showed a happy boy with one foot hanging off a cliff, a little dog at his heels.
"The Fool, my dear, signifies the beginning of an adventure or journey of some kind. The Fool is you."
He smiled at this veiled insult.
"After that, we have the Queen of Wands. You might think this obvious, you being a lady sorcerer and all, but really, the Queen signifies reaching a new stage in your development, able to understand your past and look to your future."
"That's nice." My voice sounded dull.
"Yes, roses and hugs and puppies. But look," he said,
and threw down the third card to reveal that grim, capering skeleton dancing down the road, its skull mouth open in a great cackle.
"Death? Don't misunderstand," he said when I flinched. "The death card means a great change approaches. Your life will forever alter."
He pulled at his graying beard and winked one dark eye.
"Her Majesty will commend you, and you'll be the most revered and beautiful sorcerer ever to have all her dreams come true. Huzzah! Hurrah! Biscuits and cocoa!"
He produced another card from his great purple sleeves and placed it atop the other three, The card showed a boy and a girl, locked in an embrace.
Ah, the lovers.
An inner struggle between two things.
And now, one more.
Down came the picture of the little man in the pointed hat making a toy soldier dance.
The magician.
It can signify taking control of your life. Or in this case, it can be quite astoundingly literal. The cards vanished into the folds of his sleeves.
Is that it?
I asked, wary.
He shrugged. Those are the cards that spoke to me. Is there something else you wanted?
I couldn't do it. Perhaps it was cowardly. But if he wasn't going to bring it up, then I wasn't going to tempt fate. I'd write the whole dream off as a peculiar occurrence and leave it at that.
Thank you for my fortune, I said, opening my reticule and placing the pennies on the tabletop.
Your hands are trembling, he observed.
Last night was quite an ordeal, I muttered.
Hargrove flipped the pennies into the air,
and they disappeared.
Yes, Korozov makes for a rather destructive guest, but they're saying you sent him away with those unique fire abilities.
He pulled at his beard. Such a talent.
Where did you come by it? I wonder.
Goodbye, I said, turning for the door. I was almost out when he said,
Thank you for your interest in the lives of little people, Miss Henrietta Howe.
Part of me screamed to leave, but it was too late for that. I released the doorknob. Slowly, I turned back to him.
How did you know my name? Oh, Lord Blackwood said it when you were last here, didn't he?
He asked in mock innocence.
No, he never used it.
That sick, knotted feeling settled in the pit of my stomach. There was no avoiding it.
And I didn't tell it to you in my room last night. In the fog.
Hargrove hummed.
I wondered when we'd come to that topic of conversation.
The room seemed to spin about me.
How were you able to do it? How could I have caught that apple core while in a dream?
My dear, you may not like the answers to those questions.
I knew you recognized me the first time I met you on the street. You tried to hide it, but I saw.
I came toward him, my heart hammering.
Oh, my little blossom. We're at the start of such a slippery journey.
He picked up the foul-smelling gin and took a swig.
I didn't want to do this,
he said, wiping the back of his hand across his mouth.
But I owe him that much.
What are you talking about?
Yes, I recognized you, but not from a previous encounter.
No,
it was who you looked like.
That was the killer. He took another swig, wincing as it burned on the way down.
Who do I look like? Your father, obviously.
I sat down heavily in a chair. How on earth could this dirty London magician have known my father?
That's a lie. William Howell? A Welsh solicitor living in Devon with his lovely young wife, Helena Nee Murray, and his widowed sister. Let me think. What was her name?
Anne.
Amelia. Agnes. Yes. Agnes. He looked just like you. Dark complexion, dark eyes and hair.
Drowned.
What was the story? In a boating accident? Almost 17 years ago. What a tragedy.
He looked at me with cold, laughing eyes.
Have I hit the mark?
My hands felt numb. How could you have known him?
Your father was a magician, Henrietta Howell. As are you.
I was on my feet before I could think. Gripping the edge of the table for balance, I said, He couldn't have been. He practiced the law, not magic.
The magical arts don't pay much, as you see, he said, gesturing to his squalid living conditions. But they're a fine place for a talented dabbler. Your father was exactly that. Your Aunt Agnes as well. You're shocked. Didn't know women could be magicians. It's rare, but the potential is there. It all boils down to blood. And you should never try boiling blood, incidentally, for it's a disgusting mess.
He offered me the bottle of gin. I refused, though I craved a drink.
It's even rarer that a girl from a sorcerer family inherits her father's ability. You've no sorcerer parent, so how would you explain your newfound status? A prophecy?
He blew a loud, wet, and rude noise.
You're a magician, living a most magnificent lie. Which is why, he said, leaning in closer, I feel a stupid urge to help you.
I was a magician. A low, dirty, common magician. Not a sorcerer, not the prophecy. The thoughts appeared and disappeared in my mind like ripples of water. I couldn't hold on to them. How did you know my father? I could hear my voice rising.
We met when he came to London to see about joining our guild. Magicians are disorganized creatures. But for a time we did discuss having another go at a guild, much like the Sorcerer's Order. Never worked, though. Most people didn't remember to show up for meetings, or they'd turn themselves into a teacup and couldn't make it. That was when the illustrious magician Howard Michaelmas presided.
He sloshed the gin bottle back and forth, lost in thought.
I must say, it was nice meeting you upon the astral plane. I haven't conversed with a fellow magician in that way since before the ban on apprenticeships.
My head swam.
Astral plane? Another magician trick. Our souls may leave our bodies and wander the spirit dimension. Sorcerers can't do that. That's how I got into your room and gave you that delicious apple. Anyway, we're getting off topic. Suffice it to say, I knew your father. And after his death, Agnes told me that Helena had given birth to a daughter, and that the poor widow had died from complications in the delivery. We fell out of contact after that, and I thought no more of it. Until all this happened.
He leaned over the table.
Which is why I'm trying to help you. You're in a dangerous position.
Yes, because of the ancients, I croaked.
No, because of monsters closer and more cunning than old Relum could ever be, if they discover that you're really a magician.
Don't threaten me, I snapped.
Threaten? Why should you feel threatened? After all, no one's ever tortured you. No one's forced you into giving the locations and names of other magicians, so they can be added to the sorcerer's files on Magic Born.
He rolled up his long sleeves and extended his dark, wiry arms toward me. White and grey scars lined his skin, along with old, cauterized wounds that looked suspiciously like burn marks. My hand flew to my mouth.
No one's told you, have they, that magicians are demented versions of sorcerers? Or even worse, that we're the descendants of the devil himself? But I'm certain you'll never face that. After all, you can perform their magic.
Blackwood had said the magicians were evil. His face twisted in disgust. Agrippa had spoken freely about how horrid they were. Magicians were obscene, deceitful, dirty.
I can't be one of you. I'm a sorcerer.
I knocked the chair over as I backed away. My legs were so weak I almost stumbled.
This is a trick. You're trying to get money, like you did on the street. Liar.
I can hear your terror,
Hargrove said, sneering as he rose. Perhaps I'd wounded his pride.
You're right to be afraid.
Do you know what they'll do when they find out you're a magician?
His voice turned cold.
They'll toss you out of that nice house and onto the street. They'll drag you before the Queen and have you put your name down as a potential threat. And if you so much as breathe in a manner they don't like, they'll cut all your pretty hair from your pretty head and bind you in chains. And they'll take you out on a cold, grey morning and sweep a shining axe through the air and straight into your pretty little...
Shut up!
I screamed. A burst of flame shot out of my body. Hargrove collapsed to the floor as the fireball exploded in the air. He laughed.
So temperamental! The magic reacts to that very nicely.
Hargrove rolled his sleeves down.
Come back when you can't perform their spells and your master gets truly nervous. Come back if you ever want to know a little bit more about your own father.
He dusted himself off and returned to the table. Seated, he tipped the gin bottle to his lips and recovered only a few drops.
And when you come back, bring food and drink, will you?
Once back inside Agrippa's house, I collapsed at the end of the foyer, shaking so hard I couldn't take my gloves off. It couldn't be. It couldn't. It felt as if a hand was squeezing my heart. What was I going to do? What on earth could I do? A girl child of sorcerer stock rises from the ashes of a life. Sorcerer, not magician, not me. But I couldn't be a magician.
Miss, there you are. Where were you?
Lily said, dragging me to my feet. Her blue eyes were huge.
The master wants to see you in the library at once, with all the young gentlemen.
For a terrifying moment, I thought he discovered where I'd gone. But then I recalled we were to have a class in the library this afternoon and, murder it all, I was late. I found them seated near the windows. The fellows all turned as one when I entered. Agrippa had rolled up his sleeves and was dipping his hands into a silver bowl of water.
Miss Howell, Agrippa said as I sat down beside Dee, I was about to send out a search party. Where in God's name were you?
He looked simultaneously relieved and irritated.
I'm sorry. I lost track of time walking around the neighborhood.
The words sounded distant, as if someone else was speaking.
I needed the air.
Agrippa sighed.
I understand that last night was an ordeal, but that is no excuse for missing lessons. All right?
I'm sorry.
Even I could hear how shallow my breathing was. Blackwood, seated on my other side, regarded me with interest. Agrippa dipped his hands into the bowl of water again and said,
Now, let's start with easy questions for Miss Howell's benefit. What is the difference between hydromancy and traditional water play?
Dee's hand shot up. Blackwood said,
Water play controls the element of water itself, such as parting the seas.
Hydromancy uses water as a magical tool, often as a mirror to another location.
Well put. Hydromancy, along with pyromancy, geomancy, and aeromancy, is one of the few sorcerer skills that magicians try to relearn after the great magic schism of 1526. If they wanted our abilities so much, they shouldn't have struck out on their own.
The boys chuckled. I coughed violently. Dee thumped me on the back.
Get her a glass of water, Magnus said.
He'd draped himself along a chair, his arm flung dramatically over his eyes.
Poor Howl. I'm so bored I could choke to death as well.
Agrippa used his stave to swirl the water into the air, spreading it until it resembled a large pane of glass. He instructed on how to project a specific location on the hydromancy mirror. I listened, but Agrippa's voice kept morphing into Hargrove's. In my imagination, Hargrove's smile became sinister as he dealt the cards on the table. He showed me the Queen of Wands, frowned, and tore it up. Then he dealt the magician card and laughed.
There you are, he said, stroking his bearded chin. You're a magician, Miss Howl. Miss Howl!
Miss Howl,
Agrippa said. I nearly fell out of my seat.
Are you listening?
I'm sorry, what? I dug my fingers into the chair's arm to steady myself.
Where does Cornwall stand in the war?
All eyes were fixed on me. Agrippa seemed concerned.
Are you sure you're well?
On the pane of water glass, the cliffs of Cornwall appeared in perfect likeness. Yes. My tongue felt heavy, and I swallowed, sweat beaded at my temples. Cornwall sustains a great deal of attacks, second only to London in frequency. The West, in particular, has long been under siege. No one is sure why, as it's not heavily populated. Nemneris, the water spider, is the ancient most often tasked with plaguing the area.
Good. What are we doing to counter these attacks?
Dee waved his hand back and forth,
as Wolf discussed the ward we were trying to design to shield the cliffs. Blackwood leaned to my ear and whispered,
Where were you?
Out. I snatched pen and paper and tried to take notes. Mercifully, he said no more. We addressed the situation in Lancashire, where Her Majesty had dispatched additional forces to protect the cotton manufacturers.
There have been calls to evacuate, Wolf said, shaking his head sadly. But the workers have nowhere else to go. They die sooner than lose their livelihood.
We glimpsed Yorkshire.
Nothing much to report up that way, Agrippa said, as the moorland appeared. Besides warded London, Yorkshire is the safest place to be in this war.
We discussed why the North remained relatively untouched. Fewer tempting resources, coupled with difficult terrain. While London and the coast received the greatest amount of abuse, Relum wanted to destroy the government, capture the Queen, and decimate the Royal Navy.
Much of it was lost to me. My blood was so loud in my ears. Agrippa turned us again toward Cornwall.
Admiral Ethermain leads the fleet against Nemneris. What is his new plan with regard to combating the water spider?
Dee raised his hand for the 10th time, wiggling his fingers in the air for extra attention. Magnus sat up and answered, finally interested.
Admiral Ethermain believes he must freeze the creature in its web. Ice magic on such a massive scale is difficult, but they're attempting it. The goal's to keep Nemneris from taking the war to the rest of Europe. Not that the rest of Europe cares what happens to England, of course.
He swatted his papers against the back of Cellini's head.
"How can you say that, you bastard?"
Cellini laughed.
"I'll return to Rome to complete my education and let you all rot."
Agrippa cleared his throat.
"Very good, Julian. Now, who can..." "Steady on, Arthur. Don't wave your arm like that. Who can tell me..."
"What?" His voice trailed away. We gazed in horror at a new section of the Cornwall coast. Several ships lay wrecked and impaled along the rocky shore. Their masts had been snapped in half, their hulls ripped apart. Webs covered them like a ghostly shroud. Nemneris's lice, her familiars, scuttled along the smashed hulls. We got to our feet and crowded toward the water glass.
"Look,"
Magnus said, pointing to a ship with a blue flag still raised in the air. I recognized that ship. It was the one we'd watched sail out of the docks while the crowd cheered. But it couldn't be the same vessel. Those sails had been white, and these sails were a pure... "Why are the sails red?" I asked. Agrippa put his stave to the water glass and stirred in a queer little figure eight. The ship grew larger and more detailed. Hanging from the masts like ghastly ornaments were the bodies of the men. They were masses of dark, mottled crimson. I wanted to turn away, but if I were to be a sorcerer and not a magician, not a magician, I would have to take in grisly scenes just like this one. The bodies had been stripped of all skin. The sails stained with their blood. We realized what we were looking at before Agrippa spoke the words.
"That's Relum's handiwork."
Chapter 12.
"You're not focusing,"
Agrippa said as I listed off to the side of the obsidian room. He clapped his hands.
"You have to pay attention."
"Yes," I said, staring at the wall. In the shining reflection, I could just make out the dark circles under my eyes. I didn't sleep anymore. All I could hear in my dreams were the frantic cries of Charlie and the other unfortunates dragged into Korozov. Of those sailors, as Relum flayed them alive. I was supposed to help them. I had been chosen to help them. Hadn't I?
"You are a magician."
It had been 1 week since I'd gone to see Hargrove, and his voice wouldn't leave me. We'd reached the end of April and made no progress. Agrippa was now officially worried.
"Now then, we start at the beginning of the Earth maneuver. Prepare,"
Agrippa said, pointing at the large rock in the center of the room. He was right to sound irritated. We were massively behind on the day's lesson. I was supposed to be breaking the rock and putting it back together, and I hadn't even begun. I turned, bent my knees, and burst into flame by accident.
"Watch out!"
Agrippa cried as I nearly scorched his jacket. He beat at his sleeve. I stopped burning and cringed with embarrassment.
"What is the matter with you today?"
"I don't feel well," I murmured.
"That's no excuse." His voice was firm. "You have to fight through pain. There will be times in battle where you will feel decidedly unwell."
I centered myself and prepared again for the maneuver. I lunged forward, spinning the stave above my head. The rock should have split apart into 10 different pieces. Instead, it rolled once, twice, and then stopped. Nothing I did worked properly. Nothing would ever work properly, not if I wasn't the girl in the prophecy. Something's wrong, Agrippa said. He came up behind me. You've been scattered this entire week.
I just don't sleep well.
I bit the inside of my cheek. Agrippa's voice grew soft. You can say it if something's troubling you.
I turned to him, to tell him about my visit to Hargrove, and kept silent. I couldn't lose my position. Not for anything. Not even for the sake of the truth. After lessons that day, I went to the drawing room and curled up in the window seat, the book on the Seven Ancients open in my lap. I studied the picture of Relum, his muscles and veins disturbingly exposed to the world. He'd one hideous yellow eye, positioned at the center of his forehead. Even in the drawing, I felt that gaze cut to the heart of me. Shuddering, I turned the page to the chapter regarding Korozov. Light and flame are the only known deterrent, I read. For what is a greater ally against the unstoppable force of shadow and darkness? There is, however, still no example of light or fire strong enough to eradicate the beast. That massive black cloud glared up at me. I shut that book and picked up another, very slowly. It was titled Heresy, The Great Magic Schism of 1526. Inside, I read of battles between sorcerers and magicians. There were pictures of the two armies. The sorcerer side was armed with staves and accompanied by a choir of heavenly angels. The magicians rode into battle on herds of swine, the devil himself at their backs. I didn't think it was historically accurate, but the picture was memorable. I read descriptions of how one murdered a magician so that his soul might grow closer to God in its final moments. The procedure involved cutting off the magician's arms, legs, and tongue while he was still alive. I read until I could read no more, until my heart was thundering in my chest. Closing my eyes, I shut the book and leaned against the sun-warmed window. I didn't hear him enter, and I jumped when Magnus knelt before me. "Did I startle you?" he said, smirking in that devilish way of his. I fluffed my skirt out over the copy of Heresy, hoping he hadn't noticed. "What do you want?" "To give you this." He offered another book. Henry V. Shakespeare. "I thought, since you're so fond of history and I'm so fond of theatre, we might bring them together." He took a seat beside me, the sunlight catching in his hair. "I always wanted to play Henry." "You wanted to wear armour and make grand speeches with thousands of men hanging on your every word." He gave a dramatic sigh. "My one childhood dream." He took the book and opened to a page near the end. "Fair Catherine, and most fair," he said, his voice deep and soft and almost pleading. "Will you vouchsafe to teach a soldier terms such as will enter at a lady's ear and plead his love suit to her gentle heart?" He closed the book and looked at me with an appraising eye. "On second thought, you wouldn't make much of a Catherine."
"No. Too sullen. Too dark. Too bold. You're more of a Henry. You've the name. Sort of.
What if I called you Henry from now on?"
"What if it rained in your bedchamber throughout the night?"
"You're finally learning how to be a true sorcerer."
He gave me Henry V again.
"You should read it and tell me what you think."
"Your Majesty shall mock at me,"
I said in a bad French accent.
"I cannot speak your England."
Stunned, Magnus grabbed the play and found that I had spoken the next line perfectly, I rather liked seeing him surprised. You've read it before?
Mr. Colgrind had a copy of Shakespeare's histories.
Well, they're nothing to his tragedies. We'll have to start you on a strict diet.
Don't I have enough work already?
It won't be work. It'll be fun.
We opened the play back to the scene and continued.
Oh, fair Catherine, if you will love me soundly with your French heart, I will be glad to hear you confess it brokenly with your English tongue. Do you like me, Kate?
Pardonnez-moi. I cannot tell what is like me.
Oh, go on. Do the French accent. I've never heard anything so funny. Ow! Why did you hit me?
We spent the next hour or so reading through the play, and I never laughed so much in my life as I did for that 1 hour. For a little while, the stress of the last few days evaporated. The supper gong sounded, and we rose.
How? Would you go with me to a party in Hanover Square this evening?
A party? I grew uneasy at the thought. I didn't want to go into public until I had my lessons under control. Which might be never, at this rate.
It will only be a few other incumbents. Dee and Cellini are coming too.
What if people stare? I pushed open the door and we walked into the hall.
You'd have me at your side all evening. No one will pay you any mind when they could be looking at me. He winked.
I'm not much use at a party. I don't know how to flirt. I can't dance. And I'm not funny.
What do you mean? I think you're hilarious.
I stopped walking and struck him lightly on the arm.
That's the funniest slap I've ever received. Just don't drink so much punch that you wind up sleeping under the stairs.
When I didn't answer, he spoke more softly.
You're going to be commended. These people will be your allies.
It's not a bad idea to make them like you. Was I going to be commended? These people wouldn't be my allies if they knew what I was. What Hargrove had said I was. That's easy for you, isn't it? I blushed. Being liked.
It's what my music master always told me.
Practice.
Listen to me now.
He belted out some lines from an Italian opera in a voice so off-key and wretched, I ran down the stairs to be away from it.
He raced after, singing louder and louder. I'll go to the party if you'll never sing again, I cried. Done.
Perhaps gaining a few more allies was exactly what I needed right now. And for all I knew, with Magnus about, it might be fun.
I don't know what to say at these things, Dee said, staring into his empty glass of punch. All the girls want to dance, and I'm no good at dancing. Then they giggle and walk away.
I can't think of anything to say either. We stood guard by the punch table and watched the whirl of activity. Couples danced while members of a string quartet played by the side of the room and sweated in the close glow of candlelight. Old lady chaperones in black crepe and lace dozed upon straight-backed chairs. The music was wonderful. The dancing looked a great deal of fun. Magnus took to the floor with a beautiful red-haired girl. Is she from a sorcerer family? I said, trying not to pay much attention to Magnus's new partner. It didn't matter to me anyway.
That's Eugenia Whitechurch, the Imperator's daughter. Her magic lines go all the way back to the Conqueror.
Magnus and Eugenia danced a quadrille, laughing as they turned around and about each other. I wish I could dance, I muttered.
I'll teach you, Dee said, grinning shyly. I'm no good, but I at least know how.
Oh, would you? I feel stupid just standing here.
See? It's easy.
He took my hand in his and made a couple of paces
forward and back. Unfortunately, he took too great a step and trod on my toe. "I'm sorry," he said, while I bit my lip and bobbed up and down to manage the pain. "I'm better when it's not crowded."
"I'm sure. So long as my slipper's all right. Lily will kill me otherwise."
"Oh, she wouldn't. She's the kindest girl in the world."
"And the prettiest," he murmured.
So he liked Lily, did he?
"Does she know you admire her?"
My voice held a slight edge. Servant girls who caught a master's eye could be pressured into things they did not want to do.
"Oh, no," Dee blushed. "I wouldn't want to make her uncomfortable."
He was utterly sincere.
"You're a true gentleman," I said, slipping my arm through his.
Dee smiled. Cellini appeared out of the crowd and waved at me. Two boys stood beside him, one dark-haired and one fair. They whispered to each other and followed Cellini as he came over to us.
"Howl, you are beautiful this evening."
Cellini kissed my hand with a grand gesture. He swayed on his feet and smelled strongly of punch. A slow, contented smile stretched across his face.
"Beautiful. Bella ragazza."
He muttered some more Italian, impossible to follow. I patted his arm, and Dee helped him stand.
"These are my friends," he said with a flip of the wrist.
"Love it," the fair-haired one smiled.
"And Hemphill."
The black-haired boy nodded as well.
"Very fine fellows, these two. They're Master Palehook's incumbents, but we mustn't hold it against them."
He said this very slowly, waving a finger in Dee's face as if he were making a point.
"They always lose at cards."
"That's so helpful." Lovett and Hemphill bowed to me.
"So you are the prophesied one, Miss Howell. Charmed to make your acquaintance," Lovett said.
He was a handsome young man, but there was something off about his smile.
"Thank you,"
I said, hoping I sounded confident.
"Perhaps we'll be inspired to fight in petticoats and bonnets from now on," Hemphill laughed. "Won't it surprise old Relham to see an army of sorcerers charging uphill in women's clothing?"
"Perhaps it won't shock him so much than to see a woman leading the charge," I said.
"You're going to lead us, Miss Howe?"
Hemphill grinned.
"That's quite an ambition."
"Well, not immediately, of course." I took a small step away from them, pressing my back into the wall.
"Ah, yes. Take it one step at a time. How wise," Lovett said. "How are you, Dee?" he asked, changing the topic. "Have you danced tonight? There have been no screams of pain from the ladies, so I'd assume you haven't."
He laughed. I didn't find it amusing. Dee said nothing, though his face flushed.
"I'm grateful there have been no more attacks the last few nights," Hemphill said. "It must all be down to you, Miss Howell. You walloped the old shadow in fog, they say. Some might think that display of strength unbecomingly masculine. Some might consider what you did unnatural," Lovett said, hastening to add. "But we don't think that."
Cellini looked drunkenly puzzled.
"You boys aren't being friendly," he squinted at Dee. "Are they? I can't tell. It's all fuzzy." "They're not being friendly," Dee muttered.
Cellini left our group and staggered away, back into the crowd.
"They also tell us," Lovett said, stepping closer, "that you've brought an unclean boy with you into the city. Is that true?"
I bristled.
"Who's told you that?"
"Master Palehook, of course. Everyone's wanted to know all about you, and you've strangely kept so silent. So kind of you to look after anything so damaged," Hemphill said. I imagine the sight of it turns the stomach.
See here, Dee said, turning crimson. Why don't you leave us in peace?
The two young men paid him no mind. Yelling at these fools would do nothing for me. I tried to push my way past them, but they blocked my path.
You're lucky to be our chosen one, Miss Howell.
Lovett leaned close to whisper in my ear. Otherwise, there'd be no power on earth that might persuade us to allow such a freak to live within the safety of our ward. I reached out my hand, perhaps to push him, perhaps to burn him, for at that moment I felt the flames nearly on my skin. Magnus prevented it by stepping in and grabbing the two boys by their shoulders. Cellini had brought him just in time. The Cretans cowered before Magnus. However jovial his nature, he could be fierce when he wanted.
"Get out of here," he said, his voice menacing and low.
He released them, but they lingered for a moment.
"It's got to be such a treat for you, Magnus," Hemphill said, shrinking back. "We all know you like the ladies. Having her down the hall must make it so much easier. You don't need to go prowling the streets looking for it."
I couldn't breathe. Magnus grabbed Hemphill by his collar.
"Be careful how you meant that," Magnus whispered.
In that moment, he might have given Blackwood a lesson in icy intimidation.
"Or I'd have to challenge you to a duel." "Sorcerers may not duel one another," Hemphill said. He sounded a bit shaky, though. "We're not commended yet. We'll fight with warded blades, and I'll slit you down the middle. Spill your entrails along the hall and see if there's any real blood in your veins. Now leave."
He stood aside, and the two boys slipped into the crowd.
"They don't like you," Cellini said to me, yawning. "Can't accept a lady as one of us."
He then closed his eyes and began to snore. I put a hand to my cheek and discovered it was still hot. Making a hushed excuse, I escaped into the foyer. Music and laughter bled through the walls as I walked toward the front door. I stopped at the stairs and leaned against the banister to steady myself. If that was how people behaved when they thought I was the prophesied one, what on earth would happen if they found out that I was a magician? No one could ever know, ever. God, if only my lessons would improve.
"Howell, wait!" Magnus caught up with me.
"I'm so sorry. They've always been hideous."
"Do you think they're spreading those kinds of tales about us?" I knew the value of a woman's good name. Though the rumor was blatantly untrue, the fact that it existed could be enough to damage my reputation. And right now, my reputation was all that kept me safe.
"I'll tell Master Agrippa to look into it."
Why did I come here? I should have stayed home. I sank down onto the stairs.
"Not all sorcerers are like them." "I'm not. Dee's not. Even Blackwood's a better sort, and he's as much fun as a wet hen."
Magnus glanced about to make sure we were alone, then sat beside me.
"I wanted you to feel at home."
"I can't feel at home here. Because you're a magician, and you're lying to everyone." The voice in my head was ugly. Tears were very close now. I turned from Magnus and put a hand to my mouth.
"What is it?"
His voice was gentle. He put a comforting arm around my waist and took my chin in his hand. Turning my face to him, he said,
"You can't let them frighten you."
"I'm not frightened of them." I began to shake. He leaned in close, speaking softly.
"Something's been wrong since the night Korozov attacked.
It's eating away at you." His voice was soothing.
"I know watching that little girl die was horrible."
Part of me wanted to bury my face against him, to tell him everything. The same part of me knew that such a thing was impossible. Why did I have to lie to people who were so good to me? What type of person did that make me? Breathing deeply, I told as much of the truth as I could. I'm afraid I'm not what everyone needs. Magnus took my hand.
You are. You will be.
His touch was warm. His grey eyes glowed in the dim candlelight of the hall. He had a confident smile, the kind that indicated he had never known defeat, the kind that promised he could protect me from whatever dangers lay ahead. I felt the faintest charge, like the air before a lightning strike. Magnus tightened his grip on my hand. Dimly, I remembered that there was a rumor going on about me. Even though we were alone, it was risky to sit with Magnus's hand in mine. I pulled away from him, gently. I suppose my nerves got the better of me. Go back to the dancing. I'm sure Miss Whitechurch is looking for you, I said.
Are you certain you're all right?
I could use a moment to catch my breath. I stood up and patted my hair. Magnus rose with me.
Your problem is, you've had one cup of punch all evening. Life's so much better when your head is fuzzy. Aristotle said that.
No,
he didn't, I laughed.
Magnus left. Alone, I closed my eyes to compose myself. I had to put a smile on my face and return to the room, or people might talk. A sigh turned my head. Palehook came down the stairs, a punched glass in his hand. He eyed me over a pair of spectacles.
Miss Howell, are you distressed?
More than he could imagine, but I could have at least one frank conversation with him. I would prefer you not talk to people about Rook. I wanted to snap at him, but I must be polite.
You are a topic of great conversation. Cornelius made a grave error in keeping you locked up. In the absence of anything factual, gossip is unavoidable.
He traced a slender finger around the rim of the punch glass. It made a faint, ringing sound.
Were you my incumbent? The situation should have been handled differently.
Regardless, please don't discuss me, Master Palehook. Not with your incumbents, or anyone else. I spoke with two of your boys just now, and they were exceptionally rude. People might think you don't want me to be commended. I turned to walk away, but he stepped before me.
That is an unfair accusation, Miss Howell. I stand with you in the service of my country.
He seemed to be telling the truth. I heard the firmness in his voice.
My only desire is to send the ancients back to whatever hell they came from.
That's good to hear. I was afraid you'd pledged your loyalty to the memory of Gwendolyn Agrippa.
Palehook smirked. I must acknowledge you as the chosen one. But I do still revere Miss Agrippa. She was a steadfast servant of the Order. She knew our ways.
He bowed to me.
She knew her place.
He walked away, his coded threat lingering in the air, leaving me chilled.
Chapter 13. The next day, Palehook arrived to observe a lesson. The butler announced him into the garden, where we'd all gathered to work. Agrippa believed that time out of the obsidian room would calm me, but it wasn't playing out as he'd hoped. All my attempts to create a maneuver ended with me dumping a bowl of water onto somebody's head. Poor Dee, still dripping, pretended he didn't mind. "What's he doing here?" I whispered, as Magnus fetched another seat. Palehook chatted with Agrippa over by the roses, swatting at some unseen insect. Just don't set fire to anything you're not supposed to, Magnus whispered back. We stood in a line while Palehook eased himself into a garden chair and shielded his face from the sun with a paper fan. It's a hot day, he said as he helped himself to a cup of tea. Why are you outside? Some require the extra space, Blackwood said. He didn't mention my name, but Palehook instantly looked to me. Damn. Really? Just polishing a few details, Agrippa said with a concerned glance. Proceed, Palehook said. I think we've had enough commendation practice, Agrippa said. Time for some dueling. We'll be using water. Howl, Blackwood, you're up first. I knew his plan was to get me out of the way as fast as possible, so Palehook wouldn't sit there in anticipation. Blackwood and I took our places in the center and bowed to each other. Give me a moment to start, I whispered. We stepped apart and bent our knees. The beginning was always difficult, like mentally lifting a sack of bricks. But after that, a blast of water struck my chest. I cried out as Blackwood called the water back and then sent it toward me again in a rocketing mass. Shielding myself with a thought, I fell to a knee. The attack sprayed over my ward. I stood, anger spurring me on. The water in my bowl splashed into the air and shards of jagged ice formed. I'd actually done it. With a triumphant cry, I slashed over and over. The ice shot forward. Blackwood crouched, spinning his stave. My attack slowed and the ice liquefied back into water. He'd taken control of my weapon. Panicked, I tried to regain the element. Blackwood leaped into the air and swirled the water into a 6-foot-tall spout. I screamed as the funnel bowled me over. For a moment, I struggled beneath it. I felt like I was drowning. Blackwood released the spell, and I lay on the paving stones, soaked to the skin and coughing. He offered a hand to help me up. I almost bit him.
Excellent, Lord Blackwood. That was original stave work, Miss Howell, Palehook said. He turned to Agrippa. You've such unorthodox ways of training. I'm not certain I agree, Agrippa said. I could hear his embarrassment.
If death had come for me at that moment, I'd have hugged him in relief. While Wolf and Lamb fought the next duel, I pulled Blackwood to the edge of the lawn and hissed, What was that?
I won the duel.
You made me look foolish in front of the masters. I wrung out my sleeves as best I could.
You accomplished that on your own, he snapped.
He applauded as Wolf struck the winning blow and said, The masters have a right to see your inconsistencies.
You go from transforming water to ice in mid-air, one of the most difficult spells, to not knowing how to shield yourself from the simplest attack. He scratched his chin. It's so strange.
So I'm not allowed a mistake? I shifted nervously. Did he suspect the reason for my uneven performance?
I'd allow 1,000 if you improved. But if anything, you've gotten worse.
Perhaps if you helped, instead of flinging insults, we'd find a way to prepare me in time to be commended, I whispered.
Blackwood crossed his arms and regarded me with a look of smug satisfaction.
Have I said something amusing?
All you care about is securing your own position, he said. The responsibility means nothing to you.
How could I argue? What he said was painfully true, though that didn't keep me from stepping behind a rosebush and cursing his name. As Palehook was leaving, he bid me to speak with him.
Your performance is original, he said, unsmiling.
We're working to steady my powers. I think we're making great progress, I said.
A lie. Indeed, Master Agrippa continues to have hopes for your improvement.
He nodded.
I must admit,